So, as I say, these neoconservatives had nested in Herbert Hoover's legacy, which was the Hoover Institute, supposedly very conservative, very anti-communist at Stanford University. And the origins of the Hoover Institute were very interesting because at the conclusion of the First World War, the House of Rothschild said, my gosh, you know, our paper trail is pretty bad here. It shows that we set up this whole war for our profit, and we've got to go into all the countries and get the records of our bribery and corruption of officials in order to bring about the First World War. So Hoover was given that assignment, and he had over 500 American Army officers traveling all over Europe and buying or stealing or appropriating all of these documents, which showed the real origins of the First World War and the Rothschilds' guilt in setting up that war. And these documents were brought back to this country, and they were placed in the Hoover Institution for Revolution, War, and Peace in Stanford University. And he built a big building out there, and the building is there today. And most of these things were sealed. They were not available to scholars. So this is exactly what the Rothschilds wanted. And the reason they had chosen Hoover for this vital mission was that Hoover was a longtime Rothschild employee. This also, I don't think, has ever been mentioned in any biography of Herbert Hoover. And when I used to visit Ezra Pound at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Washington, D.C., he mentioned the fact that Hoover had been barred from dealing on the London Stock Exchange. You know, Hoover never had a job in the United States. He traveled the world for years promoting phony mining stocks in Australia and Africa and South America, and he did make a fortune, and he was made a lot of money in London. But then he swindled a man out of £5,000, $25,000, which is, you know, about $1 million in today's money. This was in 1905. And so he was permanently barred from any further dealings on the London Stock Exchange. So he was temporarily out of a job. So the Rothschilds said, my gosh, here's the kind of guy we want working for us. And so they hired him at Rio Tinto Zinc, which is one of the three main Rothschild enterprises. The other two are Sun Alliance and the Bank of England. And in the same issue of The Economist that I mentioned that I read yesterday, there was a two-page spread advertisement from Sun Alliance mentioning that they lost $500 million in their current year of operations. So apparently the Rothschilds are milking that just like they milk everything else, and they've probably sold the stock to the public, and now it's going bankrupt. But anyway, real RTZ, it's called today. It's traded on the London Stock Exchange as RTZ Corporation. It's very big. Rio Tinto Zinc was one of the main Rothschild enterprises, and they made Herbert Hoover a director of Rio Tinto Zinc in 1905 after he was barred from dealing on the London Stock Exchange. And, of course, he was a Rothschild employee ever afterwards. And when Germany tried to quit in 1916, they had the same problem the Bolsheviks were to have in the following year. They raised the cry that we have no more food and we have no more money. We can't keep the war going anymore, so we're going to seek an armistice. And, of course, the world order did not want this because they hadn't even gotten the United States into the war yet. And our whole government since 1917 has been built on the force that Bernard Baruch set up in Washington in 1916 to run, had to get the United States into the war, and it could not allow Germany to seek an armistice in 1916. So they said, well, we'll take care of the money, because Paul Warburg was governor of the Federal Reserve Board in charge of the money and credit of the United States. At the same time that we were at war with Germany, and his brother Max Warburg was the financial advisor to the Kaiser and was in charge of German finances. So the Warburgs fixed up a fund of money to keep Germany in the war, but they said, now we have no food, what are we going to do about that? So that's when the Rothschilds had Herbert Hoover organize a relief commission. Well, they couldn't very well call it the German Relief Commission, since the Allied powers were at war with Germany. So they called it the Belgian Relief Commission, and they put out the propaganda that the Belgians had famine and they were starving, and we had to help the Belgians. Well, the Belgians were very surprised at this revelation because they just had one of the best harvests they ever had, one of the best crop years. And so, but, you know, because the Rothschilds had their headquarters in Belgium, the Belgians couldn't say too much about this, and apparently no one wanted to protest and say, well, we're not starving. And so the shiploads of wheat went to Europe from the United States, bought by the contributions of the American people for the starving Belgians. And when they got to Belgium, they were unloaded and they were shipped by train directly into Germany, and they kept Germany in the war another 2 years. And that's how we got into World War One. Otherwise, there would have been no World War One veterans of the United States, because we would never have been in it. And then the Germans finally had to seek an armistice in 1918, but by that time the Rothschilds' purposes, the world order, they had achieved their goals, and they had set up a super government in Washington under Bernard Baruch and Eugene Meyer. And Baruch became head of the War Industries Board, was appointed by Woodrow Wilson, which made him the czar of all American industry. He could issue any order to any factory in the United States, and if that factory did not obey Baruch's dictate, then federal government would close them down immediately. And Baruch had a partner in a venture called the Alaska Juno Gold Mining Company, and Meyer and Baruch were in charge of this operation, and it was another mining scheme such as the ones which were promoted by Herbert Hoover.